Welcome to the Social Standard Podcast. I'm Jessica Phillips, and I'm the founder and CEO of The Social Standard, a full-service influencer marketing agency. As a leader, I'm always striving to set new standards in our industry. My goal with this podcast is to highlight those who are doing the same. On each episode, our guests will take us through their own journey, what motivated and inspired them to try something new, and how they ultimately set the standard in their field. On top of that, they will provide actionable insights and ideas on how you can set the standard in your own way. So grab a cup of coffee and let's get to it. What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Social Standard Podcast. I am very excited about our guest today. So this is probably the most fun brand that I have had the pleasure of researching in a very long time. So this is Alix Peabody, and she is actually the founder and CEO of Bev. And if you can see up there, she's got her little sign that says Mama Bev. So
it does.
I like it.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited too. And I, you know, as I was doing my research for this podcast, I was just thinking about, you know, everything that you guys are doing is so smart and so cool. But for me personally, I always think about how it relates to like me in my life, right? Because I'm a consumer, right? That's what we do. So, you know, I think about how I'm very like health and wellness focused, and like low sugar, no sugar, that whole thing. And I love that you guys have the zero sugar like wine. I mean, that is it. It's so smart. It's so on point, and it's so necessary. So.
Yes. Yeah, no, totally. I mean, that was a process to get, because it's always been zero sugar, but it was a process to get approved to say so. And really? It's crazy. The loopholes you have to, I mean, not the loopholes, just like the processes you have to go through in this industry. It's like one of the most regulated and, you know, in the country.
Which is so surprising when you think about it. It's like anyone can put organic on there. Right. If they want to, but no sugar. Oh gosh. Got to make sure you.
Yeah, exactly.
Follow the wall.
Especially in booze,
Yeah, I can imagine lots of regulations there across the board, no matter what. So good for you for not backing down and figuring that out though, because I think it's an important one.
Thank you. Yeah. It took 2 years. it was always no sugar. And I love that about the product too.
Yeah. No, I think it's smart. And now you've got a really cool story, like how you started Bev, and I read a little bit about it, but I'd love for you just to kind of give us your take.
Yeah. Oh man. I mean, it's been such a windy road and so crazy. So, I mean, you know, in terms of starting the company, I did not expect to be in this industry at all. Like it was never about like, oh, I'm going to go into booze or canned wine or, you know, anything like that. I've always just really cared about gender dynamics and, you know, kind of date rape culture and drinking culture and what happens when particularly like men and women get together and they're having fun and they're partying, and how that can present a lot of, you know, dangerous environments for women. And I think most women have a story. So, you know, I was working in finance, and then moved out to San Francisco. When I was there, I got sick. And so I was in and out of the hospital, 6 surgeries, 18 months, totally not fun. Women's reproductive health related. Yeah, it was crazy. And I had to freeze my eggs, and I was trying to figure out how I was going to pay for it. So I started throwing parties and charging people tickets to come to my parties, which were a hit, which was fun. And I really loved just kind of the ethos of, okay, what happens when you change the narrative around social spaces and have them more female centric and female owned, and everyone has just as much fun, but, you know, but it tends to be more, comfortable in many ways. And so I really wanted to address that, but in an approachable way that isn't man-hating or anything like that. And so figured out pretty quickly, I needed a product to sell if I wanted to have this, you know, brand and mission. And, you know, our mission is do it different, do it better, break the glass. And at that point, you know, kind of looked around the industry and I was like, well, alcohol's at all the things I care about. It's very oftentimes involved. Yeah. And so, yeah, I cashed out my 401k and bought some rosé and off we were.
That's so awesome. I love that. That's incredible. No, wait. So were you throwing parties like at your house?
My aunt's house, my aunt and uncle's house. Yeah.
That's great. Well, I hope they have like free stock of Bev for life then.
Oh, for sure.
That's incredible. And was it women only at the parties?
No. Okay. It was, you know, they were, but it was just more of, you know, the ethos of the space. I mean, I went to a school where everyone was funneled into frat basements, you know, girls for the women for the most part aren't allowed to throw parties in their sororities. The holiday party scene when I was in finance was pretty horrible, to be frank. Tech, the same thing. And so it was just a very different ethos and mindset. And I think both, not only for women, but for men as well, right? Sure. Where, you know, if a lot of the time, if a guy's in a frat basement, he sees something that he doesn't think is good behavior, like it's hard to speak up in those environments. And so for me, it's always been about how do we open the conversation and kind of and shift the culture around drinking culture and around all of these things. So that's, yeah, that's how I ended up here. And as I looked at the industry in general, I was like, you know, this industry needs some shaking up too. I mean, all the products are, they're artisanal or they're branded for men or they're branded for men trying to buy drinks for women, generally speaking. Not much from us, you know, to us.
Bias for us style.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, I think it's smart. I mean, that's just it's an incredible story though. I mean, I love,
thank you.
I love it. I love to hear people seeing a problem and doing something about it. Right. That is, to me, that's like my general, I guess, MO in life is like, don't complain about it unless you're willing to do something about it. So kudos 100%. To you for like seeing it and doing it. I think that is incredible.
Thank you so much.
So, okay. So you came from, finance? Like
I was at a hedge fund.
So I previously was, I'm a former private equity person. So
oh, awesome.
I feel so, you.
you get the drill.
Yeah, I get it. I totally get it. So you clearly didn't have like any sort of experience in the wine industry or the alcohol industry. So, I mean, tell me how'd you get started?
Oh my gosh. I mean, a lot of Googling. I actually met our first wine supplier because I had gone out with this guy 2 years before that I met on Hinge that I remembered was in wine. And that was very strange because—
Plug for Hinge, one of our clients.
Yeah. Oh, really? Well, yeah, seriously. And so I'd met this guy on Hinge 2 years before and he worked in wine. And I remembered that because everyone in San Francisco was working in tech. So I thought it was kind of unique. Called him out of the blue and was like, I'm trying to buy, you know, rosé. And basically he's like, why are you calling me? Haven't heard from you in 2 years. Like, go to Safeway. And I was like, no, I'm trying to buy like a lot of rosé. Like, what do I do? That was a real conversation that happened. Shout out Ian. We're still friends today. But, and that's how we met our first wine supplier. And it's a crazy industry. And I think like many industries where you're like, where do I start? Well, you just ask tons and tons of questions, right? And sort of the more niche the industry is or the more family owned, you know, historically the industry is, the harder it is to like, to just Google, you know, you really just have to go down the rabbit hole of begging for introduction after introduction until you get where you want to go.
Oh yeah. Get on LinkedIn and start stalking people, right?
Oh yeah. Big time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's gotta mean you're onto something, right? Because if you're Googling it, and 5,000 results come up, you're like, well, what am I going to do here? This is going to be super different, right? So, oh, very 100%. Cool. I love that. I love it.
I mean, that's literally how it started. I was like, okay, well, I got to do that. And then my, you know, the Bev can itself is my cousin's handwriting. You know, I didn't have a lot of money. Like there were no agencies, no branding. Totally. It was, we did it all ourselves. So that's just been.
And today still it's her handwriting.
Yep.
Or his handwriting. Okay. Awesome. Oh my God. That's so cool. That's incredible.
Thank you. Yeah.
I mean, I think when I look at the brand, it's like, it's made for Instagram, right? Like this is an Instagrammable brand. It's like I'll just show everyone here. I've opened the box because hello, why not? But I mean, it looks great, right? It's very, I would put it in my feed. It's very like aesthetically pleasing. Like it makes me want to, normally my initial thought when I actually broke out the can was, okay, I would get it and pour it into a glass, but I'm looking at this can and I'm like, no way.
Yeah.
Well, no way am I putting this into a glass. This is cute.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny you mentioned that, right? Because so many times, and cans are becoming a thing now. It's, you know, exploding category. When I did it, we're talking 4 years ago. I mean, I found a lady that had a canning line in the back of a truck to drive up to the winery because no one was canning wine. It was very, very new. I mean, just the craziest stuff you could possibly imagine. Sure. Been through it all. But you know, the reason that I picked canned wine there were two, and most of them, and it was mostly just out of necessity. First of all, wine is one of the only type of spirit or, you know, alcohol that you can sell online if you're a winery. And so I knew that because the industry is so, you know, family owned, and it's really kind of a monopoly in many ways. I knew I was going to need to prove that there was actually a market for my product. And so I was going to have to be able to sell it direct to consumer. So I was like, okay, well, I guess wine it is. And, and I put it in the can and made the can, and, you know, the can Instagram friendly, cute, shareable. Again, I had no money. So it was like, well, if I make something and it's, you know, something you pour into a glass, you have no idea what it is. Right. Mm-hmm. But if it's in this iconic, you know, packaging, or my dream is to be in iconic packaging,
sure.
You know exactly what it is, and people are going to share it organically. And so that was, you know, a lot of what, you know, what went behind there. I mean, it wasn't, there were no secrets more than that, really.
That's so smart. Yeah, that's really smart, right? I mean, absolutely. I know even if we go to a brewery and we take a growler in, they'll fill it. But if it's a different brewery, on the bottle, they'll put like duct tape over it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Same thing. Cause you don't even, once it's in a glass, you have no idea. I honestly didn't, kind of embarrassed. I didn't even think about that, but it's super smart. And it's just perfect. It's like, it's perfect for social media. It's perfect for this time and this place of where we're at. And I think, you know, especially given everything that's gone down in the last year and a half, everyone's, you know, was drinking at home and doing more things, and they're looking for like, how can we elevate this experience? And I think this is great. And even I know, you know, tomorrow I'm taking, my family and I are renting a boat. We're going to go out on the water. I'll be taking Bev because it's, yay, so easy. You pop in the car. I was like, this is so perfect for all of, like, for parties, for events, for everything. So
yeah, I mean, there's also so much, like, generally speaking, if you're at an event or a venue or something like that, you're getting wine, it's poured into a little glass and you're spilling it all over yourself. And you just come to terms with that before you go. You just wear a shirt that you know is going to be spilled everywhere, right? And, you know, being able to drink it out of a can is, you know, I think great and conducive to like all sorts of different environments in a way that's approachable for people.
Absolutely. I think that you hit the nail on the head there. Now, you guys have you teamed up with or have an investment from EJ Gallo, right?
Yeah. So we teamed up with them. Okay. Yeah, we're still privately held. We run our own show, we teamed with them on distribution. So that's very recent. So basically on the wholesale side. So we have a partnership and they are helping us move into wholesale, and which is again, really, really hard, really complicated and really capital intensive, right? Because if you think about it, you need physical people who can go into every single store all over the country and merchandise things and stuff like that. There's a reason that a lot of these companies have taken three generations to build.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And is that how you guys got into Target?
Well, no, we were in Target before, but they have helped us, they've helped us basically have the capacity and the bandwidth to expand nationally with Target. So, we were going to do that and we were excited about that, but we just didn't have the manpower, to support it properly. So yeah, that we rolled out, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, and it's crazy.
Wow. Really exciting. That's so exciting. How many people are on your team?
Sales are all together. Sales four. So they do a lot of, they do a lot of grinding for sure. They're but hustling. The company is around 23.
That's amazing.
Now, if I recall correctly.
Wow. I mean, but to be 23 people and to be a national, basically rolling out to be a national brand is huge. I think that to me is one of the most interesting things about the DTC market, is that you don't have to be this 500 person company to be, you know, national. Right?
Yeah. I mean, I want to stay as small as possible, as long as possible, for so many reasons, but when you're growing, it's hard, there's a lot of work. And I like to think we stretch as far as we can until we just can't stretch anymore and we have to hire. But I think a lot of people fall into the trap of, hiring for the sake of hiring when they receive funding or, when they're growing. And that also doesn't give the people internally the opportunity to stretch as much as they can and get as far as they want to go in their careers. So
totally. I always say I will take, my small team and put it up against your big team any day.
Oh, right? Same. Same. We are small, fierce, but mighty.
That's awesome. And are you predominantly women on your team then?
Yes. We're about 85%, 90% women.
Wow. Awesome. I mean, it goes well with ethos.
There's just a couple dudes. So
one of them being your husband, right?
Yes. So. Yeah, exactly.
That's very cool. That's awesome. Well, one of the things that I really think is so interesting about the way that you guys have approached this, and even other, DTC and other just general brands, is that your brand is a true personality, right? It's almost like you take it back to basics. Like this is how brands used to launch before everything was huge and own, you know, one brand owns like 50 different smaller brands, but it's a true personality and you're very mission driven. So tell us a little bit about that mission.
Yeah. I mean, so like I said, our mission statements, do it different, do it better, break the glass. It's really around, you know, changing the narrative around drinking culture, around, you know, women drinking and celebrating themselves, celebrating your life, you know, against toxic masculinity, which is the alcohol industry specifically has been one that's, you know, that's capitalized on insecurities and stereotypes forever. Right. They're the biggest sex sells, you know, industry probably in the world. And there's a different way to, you know, there's just a different way. It doesn't have to be like that. And it doesn't have to encourage that kind of behavior in those environments. And it's funny because, you know, from the brand and you say it's a personality and whatever, the first time someone called it a brand really freaked me out. Because it was, you know, I had never thought of it like that because it was just, this is just us. This is just who we are. You know, this is myself at the beginning, you know, myself and my cousin and, you know, I hadn't met my husband yet or anything like that. And it was almost like, whoa, all of a sudden this is something that has a life of its own that's outside of me, but it's always just been the voice of who we are and what we care about. And I think that's part of what makes it, you know, buzzword authentic, but it is, it's true. You know, we talk like we talk and we're, you know, open like we're open. And it's, you know, people have asked me too, why did you pick that color? It was literally the accent color of my bedroom. Like it's been my favorite color forever. That's why.
Is that right?
Oh my gosh. The handwriting is my cousin's. Like it's just us in a can, right? In many ways. And so, you know, so that was very jarring for me the first time it happened. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I love your brand. And I never thought of it as a brand.
You're like, you mean you love me, right?
No, yeah. But it's like, you know, it's like, I love, you know, it's like, I love what you guys are saying or, you know, whatever, I love your culture. You know, that didn't scare me as much because that's just kind of our way of being, but our brand is our culture in many ways. Yeah. Right. So that was a very jarring experience the first time it happened.
How interesting. I can imagine.
Yeah, well, it was wild.
And I think one of the things that I love about that is when you're really true to who you are and you know what you stand for, it's so much easier to make decisions in terms of like, yes, this is how we're going to market. No, we're not doing that. Because I see so many brands just kind of out there floating and not really able to make quick, good decisions on who they are. And you see it a lot of times in their social media personality. Right. When it's just kind of there and it falls a little bit flat. It's like, well, but when you look on Bev's social, I mean, full of personality, full of color. It absolutely drives back to the mission you guys are doing. And I think that's critical on social. I mean, it's critical across the board for marketing, but it's one of the things that we always try to get our clients to do is to show up and to kind of be a person, be your personality, become an influencer yourself, right?
Yeah.
And you can kind of see that happening for Bev almost right in front of your eyes.
Thank you. Yeah. And I mean, facilitate the conversation, right? Exactly. And I think one of the things that's interesting about that, a lot of people, they build a product and then they try to catch up with what the brand is behind that product. Exactly. I didn't even know what I was going to, if I weren't doing this in, you know, booze or alcohol or whatever, I would be doing the same thing in any other industry because it was always about that first, right? It was always about that first. And this just so happened to be the method through which we start and have that conversation. And I think that's, you know, a lot of times when we get asked as well, I mean, it's, you know, well, how are you doing this? How are you doing that? And you know, the first real question is like, well, do you have a good brand? You know, because none of it's going to work if you don't have a brand and something that you're trying to say
and
a point of view.
And I think you guys really do a great job of expanding that, right? It's on your site, it's on your social, it's on the cans that I was just showing. And I think one of the things that you know, your team was so kind to send some product over to us, and I opened the box, and the experience of actually opening the box was great. Right. It's, you open it up, it's big, it's colorful, it says she's here. And to me, I mean, as someone who's orders, you know, I'm a mom of two little kids, so I order everything online, right? That's just how I am. The experience is just, it's lacking so much. When you order something, it shows up in a little bag. There's no brand, there's no nothing. It's not really this experience, but you guys have created an experience when you order online, which is a DTC brand, is huge.
Yeah, right. I completely agree. And it's the, you know, surprise and delight factor, right?
Yes.
That, you know, that makes you stand out and go that extra mile, I think.
Totally. Yeah. No, totally. So
don't let the ops team tell you it's not important to decrease your COGS. It is important, the experience, even though we, you know, the constant fight. No, just, I'm kidding.
Yeah. But I mean, still, especially at the beginning, when you're really kind of putting yourself out there and you're introducing BEV to the market, it's, you kind of got to show your best.
Yeah. Right? 100%. 100%.
Yeah. That's so interesting. Now, I know I love the break the glass tagline. I think it's so smart because I think so many different people, like, that can mean so many different things to so many different people, right? It doesn't really matter what it is. It's just, it's almost, it's a movement, I guess.
Yeah.
It's probably a better thing. Do you plan any events around this? Like, how do you see this kind of coming to life?
Yeah. I mean, so many. I mean, we have, you know, pre-COVID times, we were hosting events all the time. You know, panel conversations. We have a podcast called Made by Chicks, which also is on the can. We say we're made by chicks and good dudes because we love our good dudes and include them. That's kind of a little tagline, not necessarily a mission statement, but but we have, we activate around it all the time, right? And whether that's within the industry itself, you know, hosting events, bringing up women and more underrepresented communities, that kind of thing, a lot of give back. And then also pre-COVID again, but I used to host a lot of things just helping young entrepreneurs, generally female, you know, teach them how to raise money, teach them how to, really like get off the ground. What does it mean to get lawyers, get incorporated, all of those kinds of things that it feels like such a big black box to so many people. It seems just so insurmountable and scary. I know it felt that way to me. And so we really work hard to, you know, to try to create events, environments, opportunities beyond, you know, beyond the product itself. And the podcast is, you know, is one of those ways as well, where we're talking to entrepreneurs, activists, all the different categories.
That's super cool. You sound very busy.
Oh, it's crazy.
Podcasts. Oh my God. This is a lot, right?
It's been a little nuts, but
yeah. But that, I mean, startup life. Yeah, totally. I mean, I think when you're passionate about something and you love it, it's like, you know, bring it on, whatever you can do, right?
So, yeah, 100%.
Okay, so I read somewhere that your plan was to take on Budweiser, those are some goals. So give me the lowdown. Like, how are you doing that?
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily, you know, Budweiser specifically. I've kind of expanded my thinking on that in general, because that's very, I think that what I really mean by that is the ethos of the conversations. And also, you know, I joke with my team, I'm like, we sell canned wine like Jeff Bezos sold books. Like, there is so far that we can go with this. This industry from soup to nuts is really lacking in, you know, female-centric products that aren't, you know, that are relevant to how women feel today, right? Sure. And so, it's not just like, okay, this, I never set out to just like build it to flip it, right? Sure. And so in my mind, it's like, I don't need to sell to someone like that necessarily. I can be someone like that, that has, you know, that has a whole variety and slew of offerings. That's, you know, as many products when you go down that aisle that are male centric. I mean, you see 10 whiskeys, 10 vodkas, 10 tequilas, whatever it is. Why aren't there just the equal number that are focused on different demographics? You know, it's all basically for the straight white male. Yeah. So why not? I mean, there's a whole aisle to be made for us, I think. And, and a whole conversation to be had that changes the culture and changes the messaging of what I think has become standard practice for the industry.
Yeah, totally. Well, I mean, anytime things feel very kind of standard issue, it's a great time to shake things up, right? I mean, even you see it in the social world right now. It's like, you've got Facebook, you've got Google, you've got, you know, they're all being sort of shaken to their core by the likes of TikTok, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, to me, I think if I look back about a year and a half ago, I remember telling my team, like, this is a weird time, but we're going to see some very cool stuff come out of this, right? I said, I think you're going to see a lot of small businesses pop up, and I think you're going to see at least one new social platform come out. And although TikTok was already out at that moment, I mean, you look at them shining now. Yeah. It just wasn't. You're right. Yeah. And even, you know, Clubhouse has made a go at it. Triller has made a go at it. Like, there are a lot of things that are happening. that kind of knocked the big boys out of their seats a little bit. And so I told my team, I said, I'm here for it. Like, let's do it. We'll all be in a better spot because of it, hopefully.
Yeah. I mean, I actually stealing this from my dad, but you know, he told me, you know, he was like, for every AOL, there's a Yahoo. For every Yahoo, there's a Google. For every Google, there's Facebook. Those are kind of different lines to a degree, but it's just the evolution process, right? And
totally.
I think COVID accelerated that evolution process for, you know, for our time, honestly, in many ways.
Oh, absolutely. And I think I was looking, I haven't used it yet, but there's a, now I'm going to make a fool of myself, not be able to remember what it's called, but there is an alcohol delivery company.
Oh, there are a bunch like Drizzly.
Drizzly. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking of. And that was something I didn't even know was realistic, but I think that helps areas like yours. You know, maybe with wine, you have a little bit more leeway, but like, you know, hard alcohol or drinks, like I know Moscow Mule in a can now is like a thing. So yeah. I think it's helping to push this like culture, this DTC culture much, much further, I think, than would be possible.
For sure.
Otherwise.
And it's normalizing a way of, you know, a purchasing behavior that the consumer has never really had in this space before, right? You always kind of pick it up on your way rather than get things delivered. And, you know, companies like Drizzly they're very interesting. And Saucy, I think, is another one. Like they're very interesting because, you know, part of what's so difficult about our industry is it's called the three-tier system. So you have to have a distributor, and then you have to have a retailer and the supplier. They all have to be separate entities. And so those sit on top of the three-tier liquor law. They still have to go pick it up from the store and deliver it to you. It's, you know, more of like a Postmates model. And so it's interesting because so many brands in our space, they don't have the opportunity to get to know their customers.
Oh,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like
absolutely.
if you buy a handle of tequila or something at the supermarket, there's no customer service number for you to call if you don't like it, or no one to email really. Mm-hmm. And for us, we have, you know, we have a whole customer experience team, right? And so how rare and unique is that in a space where that's just never really been the case?
That's true.
And so it's really, you know, we have the unique opportunity to build a direct connection to our consumers in a way that that's pretty rare for our space, which is cool.
Yeah, you know, I don't think I'd consider that before, because I mean, I guess historically your customer service or like your introduction to a lot of like new things would be from like a bartender, right?
Oh, 100%. And that's super capital intensive, and it takes a lot of, you know, manpower, right?
Yeah.
How many bars are there in the country, right?
Yeah, it's
crazy.
True, right?
Mm-hmm. And so that's why there are so few, you know, ALK startup brands that really make it. Yeah. And when you think about, for example, I mean, Tito's, it's been around for 23 years.
Yeah.
It just, you know, it takes that long, and, you know, just kind of blew up, you know, a few years back, but it takes that long if you're really going to build something organically. Lagunitas too, I think was around for, yeah, like 25 years before they became national brands, which people don't realize, right?
And then how would you? Because if you're not in the spot, you know, you wouldn't know.
And then something like a White Claw, you know, everyone's like, oh, this startup blew up. It's owned by Mark Anthony Brands, which is Mike's Hard Lemonade. They have endless money and endless distribution. So it's just not the same, right? It's a really tough industry to be a startup in for a lot of those reasons.
Are you still happy that you decided to do it then?
Good question. I mean, I think we really are doing it different and doing it better. And I think that's something that the whole industry needs. And, you know, and I enjoy it. I mean, I really do. And I enjoy, you know, our messaging and who we're becoming. And I think there's just so much room to grow as well. So
totally.
I love it.
I mean, you've got four products right now, right?
We have six, actually.
Six. So tell me. So we've got the Rosé, you've got the Pinot Grigio, you've got the Sauvignon Blanc, you've got the Pinot Noir.
Yes. And then we have Glitz and Glam, which are the sparkling.
Oh, right.
Yes. Yeah. So it's sparkling white, sparkling rosé. And then there are some other things in the pipe. Stay tuned.
Okay.
Very exciting.
Okay. How hard is it to just, I mean, you've got your kind of core, like how hard is it to add like Glitz and Glam, right? The sparkling ones.
The sparkling ones kind of difficult because I literally was like, hey, I want a glitter can. And there, you know, and no one's made a glitter can before. It's the printing process is damn near impossible. It's really tough.
Oh, wow.
Print,
okay.
You know, basically glitter sparkles. So that one was a little tricky, but you know, once the supply chain is really set up, it's pretty straightforward to launch something new. It's a lot of just the design and lead times on printing and cans and stuff like that. But once you start to stray away from the straight sort of wine to can and start introducing, you know, different types of products that might not just be straight from the winery and include mixing mm-hmm. or anything like that, the lead times are a little longer.
Yeah, that makes sense. Oh gosh, what a process.
Yeah.
I mean, you never. I think that's the sort of stuff that people don't really think about, right? When you look at a startup, it's like you always, if I've got the can in my hand, cool, right? That's great. I'm sure this was easy and it's fine. It was a winery, but all the little things. I think.
Oh man, I mean, it took like 2 years to be able to set up a janky supply chain, right? Yeah. Let alone a scaling one where, you know, we're still doing that. It's crazy. It's really nuts. It's tough, and especially with our specs and everything that we're trying to meet, it's not easy. I mean, I remember the first time that I went to a grocery store after, and I don't like going to the grocery store. It like freaks me out. It stresses me out. I don't like to cook, but I remember the first time going to, you know, a store after having done our first production line and just looking at the Coca-Cola case and remembering, you know, that how I've seen that all over the world, and my brain exploded. You know, for the first time, it's like I'd seen it with new eyes. And it was like, how much goes into getting this juice created into this bottle, into this form factor, you know, into distribution centers all around the world to get to this store, to get into my hands? I mean, it's wild.
It is wild.
It's wild.
It's kind of unbelievable. I mean, the things that actually happen sort of behind closed doors are pretty interesting. I remember I read, when I was at my first startup, I read this book by Ben Horowitz called The Hard Thing About Hard Things.
Oh, that's one of the first ones I read.
That book for me was like such good validation on so many things, where it's just like, you know, a lot of people can give you a lot of advice, but when it comes down to it, you're the only one that can make the call.
100%. And I think, you know, if you are doing something, you know, I mean, just if you're doing something new, it's never been done before. Yeah. So nobody knows the answer, and beware of the people who tell you they do.
Yeah, fair. Honestly. That's a great point. That's a great point. Well, so I, you know, obviously I have to ask you, where do you see influencers playing in the bev role? I think I saw you guys are starting to do like a sort of like affiliate based ambassador style program that looks like you can sign up for. So that's a great move. We support that.
Yes, absolutely.
But how do you see, and maybe you don't, right? Maybe you're saying, hey, we're going to shy away from that for a while. But how do you see, you know, social and influencers kind of becoming part of that story of Bev?
Oh, I mean, it's everything, right? And I think of it less as, you know, influencers and more of, you know, brand evangelists and people who are part of and a community, frankly, right? And a community of people with similar values and similar thoughts. And it's interesting because, you know, you've got the macro, and then you've got, you know, the micro, so to speak. And everyone wants to learn about things through their friends, right? And 100%. Through people they consider their friends, even if they don't necessarily know them, but who have that approachability, you know, when it comes to their social platforms. And so for me, it's so important. It's everything, right? That people want to learn about things that, you know, that their friends are doing. Yeah. And so for us, I mean, it's critical. It's really mission critical. And I think when we do sort of our brand ambassador program and stuff like that, it's also really, really critical to me that these people, you know, don't just want to get a case of Bev necessarily, but really care about what we're trying to say and understand it.
Exactly. I think that authenticity it has to be there. It's shined so brightly from, you know, your core kind of company that it would be a downfall to kind of go just to anyone and everyone right away.
Yeah.
Right?
And I think the consistency is more important than the following in terms of, you know, I'd rather have someone with, you know, 2,000 followers posting about Bev all the time because they love it so much and they're drinking it all the time, you know, than one super mega famous person post once.
Yeah, you know, that doesn't, totally.
It doesn't resonate the same way.
Yeah. Well, and I think it was smaller brands, and I see a lot of DTCs. That's what we're seeing is the more micro sort of underground bespoke word of mouth approach has been something that's been really important, I think, huge. To a lot of those brands. And then as you go, of course, you know, like you're talking about with your jankety, your jankety process before, it's like at some point you do have to scale, right? And you do got to hit some bigger names, but, and there are, there's so many people that fit, I think, the mold of what you guys are doing. I don't see any problems there.
Yeah.
I'm glad, you know, obviously we're an influencer marketing company. I'm happy to hear you say that influencers are a big deal, because I think that they are really mission critical for so many smaller brands. And where we see people have the most success and the biggest results are with brands that are sort of up and coming, right?
Yeah. And I think the thing too, that's really interesting about just the influencer world in general, you know, is that you start small, whatever it is, but you're building your brand, you're building a little bit of that, that cult following, if you will. Right. Mm-hmm. And then you don't have to, when you start talking to those bigger influencers or, you know, higher level talent who've been around for a while or whatever it is, you know, they're supporting you. They're not overshadowing you, right? Because you've built this foundation of, okay, these people really care about these things,
yep.
you know, and this product and what it stands for and what it means and the why really behind it. Right. And so it becomes, it is authentic, right? Yeah. You know, you start to get sort of that inbound from, you know, from people that you never thought in the world that you'd talk to or meet, who are excited about what you're doing and want to get behind it, not in front of it, which I think is really important.
Yeah. I think that's a really good distinction, behind it and not in front of it. I mean, I really think that's sort of the difference between influencers and traditional celebrities.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. Super cool. Yeah, no, that's great. Well, obviously, you know, we're here if you need us, but, I think it's really interesting what you guys are doing. I think you've had a lot of success that is literally only the tip of the iceberg. So I'm pumped for you guys. We're absolutely going to be following along. And before we wrap it, I've got to ask you, give me one influencer who has had an impact on your life, in some way, shape, or form.
Oh man.
I know. I always put people on the spot and they're like,
Oh gosh.
Let me just think, right?
So many, you know, it depends on what category in terms of, you know, in terms of my skin regime and fashion and all that stuff. I mean, I have to plug, you know, Sarah and Erin Foster. I love them. You know, Emily Weiss from an entrepreneurial perspective.
Absolutely.
You know, Ty Haney, Whitwolf, like all of these people who have really made it feel more possible for me, I think are huge. And then, you know, and then the advocates like Mina Harris and, I love her. I mean, she's great. And Sophia Bush and, a lot of these women who are just really breaking the glass and forging their way in their own way. So
totally cool. But those are great ads. I think there are a few actually that I will probably start following now that you mention them, because I haven't been following. So good ads. But, Alix, it was so nice to chat with you.
Thank you.
I'm so excited about Bev. I think I can't wait tomorrow to get my butt in a boat and on the lake and enjoy probably the rosé is what I'll be going for tomorrow. So
awesome. Tomorrow you're a rosé girl. Switches up.
Always. Absolutely. And I'll be trying some of the glitz and glam too. I think that sounds pretty good.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to chat with you as well.
Yeah. Likewise. Thanks. I hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as I did. If you're interested in setting the standard in influencer marketing, please check out our website, www.sostandard.com, or give us a follow on Instagram and LinkedIn. Be sure to head over to the Social Standard YouTube channel to check out the video version of this show. If you're enjoying this podcast, please support us by subscribing, sharing, or leaving a review.